From going left to being willing and able to take a right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Jason Burns.
And I'm Danny Nucci, and this is the What About Podcast.
Danny, we are right now in the final month of August with only one more week to go.
I love the final month of August. That's fantastic.
What did I say, final month?
I love it. No, I love the final month of August because it feels like the dog days of summer. I went to an Angels-Mets game. It was 110 degrees. And it just felt like, you know, the Angels suck. The Mets were at the time of this recording still trying to get a playoff spot.
But suck adjacent. It's not a great division.
No. And it just felt like the dog days of summer, man. It felt like the teams were like out there like just grinding away. It just felt like that, you know, we're not in the playoffs yet. We're not in a play. Just the dog days of summer. So anyway, what were you intending to say?
I meant to say we're in the final week of August, and we are real close to September, which for me here is a godsend because it, like you and your game, it's been 100 degrees every day. It's been super humid. It's been absolutely miserable. And I'm a fall guy.
It taxes you, doesn't it? It fucking taxes you.
My wife is... she's been training for a marathon. So she's running like 5-10 miles in this stuff every day. And I get so worried. And she's got a little thing on her phone that if she drops, I'll be informed that if she goes down because it's been so hot.
That's kind of adorable, I have to say. I'm just going to say it's kind of adorable.
I'm kind of adorable. You know who else is adorable? Tyrese.
Tyrese? Tyrese Gibson? Yep. He was great. I thoroughly enjoyed this interview. I didn't know where he was going. And I really appreciated that. I really did enjoy it. And I love that, you know, he talked about, and it's true. There's something about his journey that I think really illustrates that this idea of being able to control your destiny is fucking horseshit. I think there's a direction and a target you can go to, but how it plays itself out, I think, is a mystery for everybody. Certainly for him. And I love at the end where he sort of gave us, well, actually, there was a bunch of things going on. I was doing many things at the same time. And he was a trailblazer, pace setter, however, whatever you prefer, pace setter, trailblazer at that time. But he's got this new film coming out, 1992, set against the backdrop of the Rodney King riots. Can we call them the Rodney King riots? I don't know. I was in fucking British Columbia when all this went down. It was crazy. I literally was the one time I was not in L. Actually, that and the 94 earthquake. I was off on location. But that's another story. So without further ado, the very, very talented, prolific, and charmingly opinionated Tyrese Gibson.
Your name says Voltron, and I know your company is Voltron. Were you a cartoon Voltron fan?
I was. Yeah, Voltron and Transformers.
I just did a podcast. Do you remember Mask? It was like Momo armored military unit or something like that.
The answer is no by the look on his face. That's what the answer is. I'll answer for you, Terry. No.
It was short-lived.
But I was not missing, you know, Defenders of the Earth, Thundercats, the Care Bears. Now we can keep going. I definitely had some favorites, but I missed that one.
All right, Tyrese, you were born in 78. I was born in 78. I'm looking at the Chinese zodiac calendar right now, and I'm going to read what that is. It's the year of the horse, and it says, in spite of their short-tempered nature, they are optimistic, kind-hearted, responsible, righteous, and always ready to help others. Is that you? Does that describe you?
100%.
So when you grew up, here, right? You don't know where I am. You grew up in LA, right?
Yes. Born and raised in LA. Yes.
At what point did you realize that you were going to do music? Because that's how you started, right?
Yes. My voice at the time completely sucked because I did not know that was in the cards. Most Black people know how to sing. Rumor has it. It's just kind of... It's like we're just kind of naturally.
Yeah, surprising when they can't. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, damn, what happened to him?
Whatever to you.
Like, that's kind of crazy. But, you know, natural athletes and all of these other kind of things, stereotypical but yet real things that we just kind of naturally are.
So I didn't really know that that was in the cards for me because I didn't grow up singing in a church. I didn't like get out in front of the choir. It wasn't a thing. And then for me also growing up in the ghetto, you know, everything about singing is soft.
Yeah.
Unless you're specifically singing in the church, you're looked at as like, man, go on over there with all that soft ass singing and all that emotional shit. You know, it's Crips and Bloods and gangsters and dope dealers and guns and drive-by. That's the neighborhood I grew up in. So it wasn't necessarily a safe place for you to be like having conversations about Crips and Bloods and then go, I want to tell you, baby. You know, Luther Vandross was played in the hood.
Sure.
Don't sing Luther. Shut the fuck up. Don't sing him.
So was it your like dirty little secret? You'd go home and you'd sing in the shower and try to find your voice?
I don't really know if I looked at it as a secret. It just was like, I really like this. My family just kept telling me to shut the fuck up. And then, you know, 20 years later, everybody's still calling because they want something.
Mm-hmm. Sure, of course. Yeah, it's amazing how things shift, isn't it?
Remember, do you remember the guy you kept telling to shut up? Now you're calling me because you need something, you know, yeah.
You've got siblings, Tyrese. Where do you fall in the age rankings?
Well, I'm the last child of four,
mm-hmm.
So I'm the last one.
So being the youngest, you definitely were told to shut up because as the youngest in my household, I know that, you know, once you're the last one, I mean, everybody's dealt with everything they can deal with at that point.
Yeah. It's rough. They their fuses are short.
Well, thank God you didn't shut up because we wouldn't be here. My question is like, okay, so you're singing, at what point did this become like a thing? Like what happened? Cause I mean, I'm always interested in the origin story cause it doesn't really make sense. I mean, you know, yeah, there's all the stories of hip hop artists coming out of that part of Los Angeles and being very successful at that time. But for you, like, okay, I'm going to be an R&B singer. Like how did that become a professional thing?
Well, good question. And thank you all for having me on your platform, by the way. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here, man.
1992, Labor Day weekend, Friday, August 30th. But let's get back to your question. My mother was an alcoholic, rest in peace. And I got introduced to the greatest pedigree and catalog of R&B soul music because my mother needed a soundtrack while she was drinking. Donnie Hathaway, Barry White, Marvin Gaye, Teddy Pendergrass, the OJs.
Did that give you a complicated relationship with music though, Tyrese? Because knowing that when the music came on, what it meant?
No. No. Because I wasn't putting two and two together till I got older that this mm-hmm. music encouraged her to keep drinking. I didn't really know that, you know, if she played 10 songs in a row that she would drink two full bottles. Like I was too young to make the connection. I was just like, she's drinking. I don't like it.
Right.
And while she's drinking, she's listening to music.
Right. Yeah. My dad was an alcoholic. He was the same way with, you know, sports. Yeah,
so your father's soundtrack was sports.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's something about the competitive spirit and energy of looking at a game, whether you win or lose, that made him, God damn it, that he's just throwing them back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if he's still with us, but, you know, God,
he is.
Praise God. So, yeah, my mom, who passed away 2 years ago on Valentine's Day of all days, is the gatekeeper of my introduction to music. Like, I'm really 60 years old, stuck, unfortunately, in a 45-year-old body.
Mm-hmm.
Every birthday that I have, I'm feeling like, wow, finally I'm catching up to my age because, thank you, I've never felt my age.
You talking old soul kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely like, bro, the gray hairs on y'all face and faces and the heads is like.
Don't tell anybody. It's audio. No, I'm just kidding.
Gray hairs that y'all have right now, I'm jealous. I'm waiting on my shit to come. Like, you don't even understand. Everybody gets older and they're like, oh, my God, I'm getting. I'm like, shut the fuck up. Do you understand how incredible it is to get older, to like get older, you know, like no one wants to wrinkle away and wither away. But like, I love getting older. I feel like my age is finally catching up to the way I feel. Like, you guys look like my friends. Like, I don't really hang out with anybody that's like 17. And like, go over there, youngster. You know, I felt that way at 17. Get away from the 17-year-olds and you're 17. Like, yeah, it's that. It's like when you go to a lunch or a dinner and you leave the same person you showed up as, give me my 3 hours back. Like, I didn't learn anything.
Like, I like it. I like it.
You know, so that's it, you know, and that's what I pull from musically, sonically. I cannot relate to auto-tune and anything that people are doing in music. You know, the executive producer of my new album, Beautiful Pain, is David Foster.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
He's 70 years old. Like,
yeah,
we're texting every day. Like, this is my guy. Like, this is where I'm at vibrationally. Quincy Jones, David Foster, Tyrese. And when it all happened, I was like, well, of course, I feel this.
So when you made the first record, were you like, this is the vibe? I'm like, you're like, okay, did you turn on, if you don't know me by now? Were you like, can we do something like this?
You will
never ever know me.
Oh, yeah,
no,
man.
You won't.
Oh, that's my jam. But
all the pain that we've been through.
Oh, we're just gonna sting. I like it. So is that, did you go, I want to do like an old school thing?
Trust in me.
Oh, I fucked up. Because I know that you don't want to let go of that song. I know.
Long as we've been together, it should be so easy to do. Oh, don't get so excited when I come home a little late at night. Cause we only act like children when we argue, fuss, and fight. Mm. Come on, man.
I know. I know.
Why did you do that to
yourself? I know. I fucked up. I know. No, I can't do it either.
Hey, you expected to do that and move on to the next thing?
Sure as fuck did.
I just told you I'm 70 years old. And I'm
just as fuck. I sure did. Oh, Jesus.
So did you put those kind of records on and say, this is what I want to make? This is the music, I kind of music, the vibe I want to create?
Here's the thing. If I'm being brutally honest, I didn't know what fucking direction I was going in for my first album, because I was, everything about me was in disbelief that I even had a deal. Everything about me was in disbelief that,
yo,
hey, I got the director on the phone. Ariel Roman, I'm doing an interview and you just called me twice. You want to say hello to Danny and Jason? I did not want to not call you back, sir. I have the utmost respect for you.
No, enjoy your interview. You're just showing our frantic relationship.
just so you know, Ariel, I just called you a Decepticon again in another interview, and I told them
okay, so what, did I look like the big ant monster?
No, man, but I told them that on the set, one of the most uncomfortable part is when you wanted me to punch up the N-word, but you didn't know how to get me to do it. I want you to say it with I want you to feel it. I was like, okay, Ariel, I got you. I said the word a little too soft. I'll put some more heat on it.
Anyway. Don't take it lightly.
Don't take it lightly. Is everything okay? I think we got another call that we got to jump on, right?
Okay, no, just finish the interview and call us.
Oh, something about distribution. I just got an email. No?
No, yeah, it's all good.
Okay, so right. I'll call you back. I got one other interview to do after this, and I'm free for the day.
Okay, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the director of 1992.
Congratulations on the film. Really.
Thank you. That y'all watched the movie, right?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's really good.
You want to tell him a couple things about how you feel? He needs to know.
Oh, he knows he's got a winner. He doesn't.
Oh no, he doesn't know until you tell him.
He doesn't need to hear it from
Israel.
Me. I'll tell you what.
A film about.
I'll tell you what. You know what scenes I love the best, and not just because I'm a schmactor, but I love the scenes between you and your son, and I love the scenes between you and Michael Beasley. I just love the sort of tender little moments in between. I thought it was great. I mean, the action stuff is great, but I really love that.
Thank you, man. You know, it's. it's like when you try to get something, you know, authentic as possible, but then you have also a very, you know, heisty plot. The idea was to melt it both, that it's going to be like, you know, an elevated experience rather than just the action and the mayhem of the riots.
Yeah, and honestly, it didn't feel like you rushed into the plot. I mean, it felt like you established it. I love the scene where you tell your kid that you have that he's going to respect in the house. I mean, that scene breathed. It wasn't like, okay, they have issues, let's move on. It breathed, man. It was cool. It was great. And a lot of those scenes are that way.
Thank you. That scene specifically was mainly written by Tyrese himself.
Well, there you go. It's a collaborative media, I've heard.
We were working so hard to try and find, you know, we had like one scene in the whole film to establish that relationship. So it was so stressful because we had to establish everything. Mercer, his life, where he lives, you know, and recreate like all of that. And to pinpoint on every detail on that room was a contribution to who is Mercer and to what his relationship. And we worked really, really hard, and we came pretty prepared, but that day was like a day of like marathon. I destroyed Tyrese.
Oh God. He did.
It certainly doesn't come off that way.
This guy is from Israel and I'm from South Central, and he's whooping my ass in my neighborhood.
Yeah, let me just give you one fact that I want to make it clear. I was born in Israel. I'm 24 years living in LA and 27 years in the States. It's most of my life I'm here.
And you still don't sound American. You need to spend some more time with some more American speaking.
By the way, the same you connected to South Central, I'm connected to Israel.
And that's history in itself, because there has never been a non-black filmmaker with any film that's ever happened in South Central. Mm. Color, Boys to Men, Menace to Society, Poetic Justice, mm-hmm. Baby Boy, never. He is the first, and this is the most diverse cast of any film ever out of South Central. And we were able to figure out a very one-of-a-kind pivot. Like every time you see white people in the hood, it's always evil, racist police officers fucking us up. This was interesting. This was very interesting. And
an anomaly in today's business that this is, you know, that this happens, because it's true. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't think where you're born or what your circumstances are should dictate what you're able to express. And that's fucking phenomenal.
And an anomaly in today's business to get an original idea that isn't a franchise into the theaters. And how great is it for audiences to have that? And I feel like we're headed back towards that.
Ariel motherfucking Roman, the Decepticon who even landed in South Central LA, changed everything.
By the way, I had to go to Google to find out what is Decepticon. From the Transformers that came to destroy all of our beloved robot.
Look at that. Boom, he's got it on speed dial right there.
Yeah, he literally did not know what a Decepticon was, because I did a an interview with Josh Horowitz, mm-hmm. and I called him a Decepticon in the interview like 10 times, and he's like, what is this?
What is Decepticon?
What is this Decepticon? What is this? Is he disrespecting me? Is he calling me something out of my name? What is this? And he looked it up.
It's the logo of your company.
Well, sir, as a child of the 80s, there's no better compliment than to be called a Decepticon. That's for sure.
All good picture, guys. All right. Have fun.
Thank you.
Ariel, thank you so much.
Congrats.
Really cool.
We got a 2-for-1 here. That's.
I was going to say, what a bonus. We just got a bonus.
When the calls come in, baby, you never know. You know, Janet Jackson might hit us next.
Great.
When the movie is going to come out, Janet, and she's going to say, anytime, I'll go watch it.
What about pivoting?
You know, for adults who have been able to live their dream, it always sort of seems to start out as a kid who has people around him who will nurture that dream. Did you have that? Did you have somebody that said, hey, man, whatever you believe, you can make happen?
No.
So how did you see this vision, this idea of yourself in the future? How did you bring it into light?
I didn't see it. I am the greatest wingman of all time. I have a concept that I want to introduce to every entrepreneur who's willing to listen. Shut up, listen, and look for the pivots. You are not smart as the Lord Jesus Christ, who has already pre-planned and mapped out your life and your world and your destiny. You may go to school for law because your mama was a lawyer, and now you think you're a lawyer. You're going to take that bar exam that you passed, and you're going to end up being hired as a CEO, and you're going to be the smartest CEO of the company because you know contracts and paperwork. You'll take the gift of what you have, you're legally wired, and now you have to use that gift as being an attorney while applying it to running a company. Take what you have, dream with your eyes open, allow yourself to pivot and say, oh my God, what's that? And fucking go for it.
So define those pivots, Tyrese, in terms of your own life. Was acting a pivot?
Man, John Singleton, rest in peace, talked me into some shit I didn't want to do.
Oh, I love that. I love it because it's true. That's how shit happens.
I never wanted no parts of Hollywood. I thought it was just a bunch of sickos, weirdos, and like, what is that? You know, oh man, he went Hollywood. Like everything about that for me being in the hood was a negative, negative, no, no, no. And fast forward 10 billion in the box office later, I realized that Hollywood is a career and an opportunity. Yes, there are some kooky people in every world, from Wall Street to real estate to in the tech world. And you have to protect your energy.
Yeah, but there's a you know, it's tipped, bro. It's they're all the world is tipped towards Hollywood, man. There's way more. They're sliding in, bro.
No, I disagree. And I'll tell you why. Okay, so are there more billionaires in Wall Street than Hollywood?
Yes.
Are there more millionaires in Wall Street than Hollywood?
Yes.
So where is the tip?
In terms of crazy, in terms of characters, in terms of people being
cannot
off.
Be normal. In Wall Street.
Sure, but the definition of normal, that's fine. I just mean there's more kooky characters that Hollywood attracts than anywhere else.
No, there are more kooky characters that Hollywood attracts, and the only reason you feel that way is because the kooky end up in the movie.
Oh, that's well, there's that, sure. Sure, they're more visible. They're more visible is what you're saying.
But you've sure. arrived at a perception of where the majority of the kooky lands because you're looking at us with movies and TV shows every day. The kooky people are in the biggest buildings ever in New York City and in the Bay Area out there in Silicon Valley. That's where the kooky is, and they are not on camera every day.
Sure.
Their net worth is more significant than ours. Their family, their generational worth, the things, wealth, the things that they're creating and doing and how they're going about implementing visions. There's more of a community of people that are supporting your visions and ideas when they happen. You can't be normal, wake up talking about Apple. You cannot be fucking normal over here adding phone apps to a goddamn iPhone, man.
By that measure, I can't argue. I can't argue.
You can't argue because it's true.
I can't.
Is anybody normal who invented Instagram, TikTok?
I also think like every industry has. I come from the comic book industry, and okay, we got some quirky. No, I'm not normal. We have some quirky people.
So how fucking powerful is the comic book community as a following? I mean, at this point, there's at least 150 events that's created to cater to wanting you guys as real comic book geek fans, followers, supporters, passionate. They want you as an audience. They don't want me. There is no fucking Comic-Con committed to us regular people that's not into comic books in that world on that level. Come on, man. Look at his whole background. Look at my background.
I'm keeping the mystery. I got the mystery going.
Yeah, you're like really regular. You ain't got nothing in your goddamn.
You don't know.
You
yeah,
might
no,
be I'm... the weirdest motherfucker on this show.
I mean, though. It's true.
When that falls back, you should see all the BDSM stuff behind
yeah,
it.
He got fucking Muppets and he got goddamn Kermit the Frog devil worshiping shit on the floor. He just has to take it off camera. Oh, man, if my devil worshiping Kermit the Frog is
is on camera, they're gonna fucking think I'm fucking. You might get off this Zoom call and think I'm like, what is your name? Kenny Rogers. Oh, he fucking lost it.
So Tyrese, if acting was never the plan and that was a strange pivot for you, was it the strangest pivot you've ever made or the one you least expected?
Singing was the strangest pivot, and definitely acting. And definitely acting with any piece of success coming with acting. Like, who the fuck are you talking to? Like, what are you?
You got thrown in the deep end, bro. You got thrown in the deep end. You're like, all right, I'll do. And then you got thrown in the deep end. This wasn't like, oh, I've got this nice little scene with so and so for part of the. I mean, you got swim, motherfucker.
Yeah, get in there, right? Mama didn't act. Father didn't act. I mean, I at least should say that my mama was Anita Baker. I should at least be able to say my mama was Gladys Knight or somebody that sings. No, it just happened. And so I am the uncomfortable discomfort of my life. And yet the gift is that every day feels like Christmas, because where the fuck did this come from? And how do I keep or sustain something that I never asked for, never wanted, never seen coming? I'm waiting on Ashton Kutcher after 25 years to tell me I'm being pumped.
Little 90s reference. Well, here's the thing. I we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to point out something, that when you started working as an actor and you were already successful, Grammy nominated R&B artist, you were kind of one of the first of those real dual threat. And the reason I say real dual threat is that you were successful and visible doing both music and being an actor at a time where, because you were one of the first, you were sort of one of the first trailblazers where you had to balance both.
I was actually balancing five. And let me please clarify, I'm not gloating, it's my truth. If you're insecure, what my truth is going to make you uncomfortable. I started off in a 30-second commercial. That turned into me getting a record deal. That turned into me being an MTV host opposite Carson Daly, TRL. I was hosting MTV Jams Countdown.
Which we should also define, Tyrese, because at that time, that show was the show for kids of a certain age. You came home from school and that is what you did.
That's it. So then it went from MTV hosting to then I secured two major multi-million dollar contracts with Tommy Hilfiger and the first exclusive black model for Guess. Mm-hmm. All over the billboards. And then came acting. And I'm doing all five.
And those were all pivots, right? Each one was a pivot.
What the fuck is this? Where did it come from? And how do I, what is a photo? And what is this? There was no blueprint whatsoever.
So when the MTV thing happened, Tyrese, that had to be, I mean, you were learning on the fly, right?
Everything.
He's done everything on the fly.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I'm winging it. I mean, y'all should make me a co-host on this podcast.
Oh, there you go.
You did bring it. You brought a guest.
You know what? If you find the time, by all means, I don't know what you do with your time. I can't even imagine. Because how many kids you got? You got kids, right? How
I
many
got
kids
two you got? Daughters. Yes.
How old?
17 and 5. Think about this. If you guys had $100 million podcast deal with satellite, this and that, mm-hmm. and you guys is like, man, I think we need to go and look for a partner. You remember Tyrese?
Yeah.
This interview has now created another pivot.
Mm, that's a good point. Yeah. Every opportunity you put yourself in is an opportunity for a pivot in the future.
That's it. And you have to allow yourself to dream with your eyes open. It's right there. And you could be like, you can decline it. You can turn it down. But you meet people and they end up catching a vibe with you. And now they have you in mind for things that they never had you in mind before they met you.
Mm-hmm. Which is one of the most annoying things about this business, Tyrese, I find, is that everybody wants to put you in the box that they feel you're most comfortable in. Like, oh, well, this is what he does. So let's just he can't do anything else. How did you push against that? Because it happens all the time.
The only box that I belong in is the box office.
Hey, there it is.
Thing is, right, although I did not know what, when, where, and how, this is why I'd say, people, man, my life feels like Christmas, because every single day
don't know what call is going to come in. I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm just like a little kid, you know, I'm 45, but my brain is just like, really? Really? You know, let me give you an example.
Yeah.
I was 8 years old. We did a school trip to Universal Studios, riding around on this tram car. And I'm like, wow, this is how movies are made. Fast forward, I got 3 theme park rides at Universal now.
That's awesome.
Transformers the ride, Fast and the Furious the ride. And now they're building a freaking Fast and the Furious roller coaster. How? How do we get here? It's unbelievable.
So we have a listener question, and this comes from Maddie D. And Maddie D asks, in 100 years, what do you want future generations to remember Tyrese for?
My transparency and my commitment to giving you permission to be great. Without just being great, I want to give you the details. We got enough people riding around in Rolls Royces and living in mansions and on private yachts with helicopters. We see you and your success, but how did you do it? How did you get it? Are you insecure, fragile? Are you threatened by the idea that you could actually give me insight and information and then I could be, oh my God, thank you for spelling this all out. And now I know how to go get it for myself. The saying is, it's me today and it's you tomorrow. That's how I feel.
It's true.
If you went from being a dollarnaire to a millionaire, I've done my job. I mean, everything attached to me wins. I'm gonna give you the information and intel. And in most cases, I'm cursing you out because I'm trying to force you to push further into your own magic. Because a lot of people don't want this shit as bad as I do, even to this day. How many more examples of success can I give you? And if you're going to listen to anybody who has no agenda, I'm not going to rob you, steal from you, no publishing, not going to do no uncomfortable, weird shit. It's going to be like
no kooky shit.
Boom. Man, I did a 3-hour lunch and he gave me so much information and intel that changed my life. And he's not even trying to figure out what he's going to get out of it. He just like blessed me and gave me the insight. That's who I am, man.
I love, did I pick the wrong song to start singing or what? Was that great?
What is that, the rule in Hollywood, that if a song runs longer than a certain couple of seconds, you got to pay for it? Do we have to pay for that song now?
No, I don't think we do. God, was that just great? And, I mean, it's one of my favorites. And when he said Teddy Pendergrass, I was like, oh man, you know, that, just that song. It's a chorus that just, when I hear it, something happens to me, man.
Well, it happened to him,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I know. That's what's great. That's what's so great, man.
What our listeners won't know is that, I mean, he had his eyes closed. His head was in the air. He was singing it. He was in the moment.
He fell right into it. What a fascinating dude. And I appreciate what he was talking about in terms of, you know, part of his purpose here is to share what his experience is and to hopefully you can take that information and shine with it, which is great. And because one album is enough.
Double.
It has to be a double album on the same day that his new film that he stars in, he's terrific in, drops. So it's God bless him. More power to him. Shine on. And thank you for listening.
Music by Denny Nucci. Produced and edited by the same two people you heard hosting the show, because they have no friends.